Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever too warm for the cape this summer.
Yeah, we gotta do it.
They gave us a portable air conditioner, but it's still too hot.
A couple fans.
And of course, the Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Bob After Dark, the heartthrob himself. Well, JTT himself, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going? Yeah, a couple fans around here trying to cool off, but you know, we're getting it done, and we're looking on the – oh, I didn't even pull up the phone lines here. We're looking at the YouTube as well tonight. Callie as well chiming in saying hi. So hi, Callie, and hi,
hello,
everybody.
Hello, all the chat.
Yeah, listening and viewing.
So before we begin, Count, let's get your weekend update from you.
Yeah, Bob, you know – it was kind of a warm week. Well, it's a warm day today in the region as well, you know.
We got summers from nowhere.
It was nice. I was doing some dog watching. I was watching some dogs.
You were watching some dogs. Yeah. Did you walk said dogs?
Yeah, you know, it was a big, you know, had the, they're two dogs, so, you know, that's a big commitment. Like watching kids, basically. But they were good dogs. Watched some for some friends. Selsher Steph, actually. I watched her dogs and her fiance
friend
Ray's
of the show.
Dogs as well. Friend of the show. And, you know, that was a good time, you know. I'm a beloved in the dog community.
Yeah. Now, Count, you were talking to me before the show, and you and I pointed out something. We have had a lot of guests on recently.
Yeah.
We've been on a long streak of guests, and it's been pretty nice because it's always new to bring a new face in and get some new perspective on whatnots. And this week is no different, Count Panic. We have a very special guest that has been waiting to come on because I rescheduled them for when we had an election night. So this is long overdue.
Okay, yeah.
And I would like to say hello to our guest. We have from the Exiled Catholic Church, we have Bishop.
Wait, before you do that, Bob,
yes.
You're going to hear a voice in a second here.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, just make sure.
Are you ready now?
Yes, we're on. Go ahead.
Okay. I didn't hear the voice.
I know. I didn't hear the voice, too, but we're on the phone lines.
Okay, so. That works for me. It'll come on here in a minute.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right. So we have Bishop Christina Rake on our show this evening from the Exiled Catholic Church. Oh, hey there, Bishop Christina. How are you?
I'm well, Bob. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So the first place to start on our interview, because it's going to be the topic of conversation this evening, what exactly is the Exiled Catholic Church?
Oh my goodness, I was so prepared for exorcism and paranormal questions. I wasn't ready for a religious one.
Oh, don't worry, you're getting those too. Don't no,
it's a paranormal show.
It's a paranormal show, but we do need to explain where you come from.
So, not the same as Rome, but same history. That we come out of the old Catholic Church and new church. So we're Catholic, just like Orthodox are Catholic and other independent Eastern churches are Catholic. However, we have a special place in our hearts for the marginalized. So we are open to female clergy, married clergy, gay clergy, trans clergy, and we minister to all of those communities that are usually left out of Catholic services.
There we go.
There you have it.
There you have it, folks. Now we know where we're at. We could dive into the paranormal.
Get the religious stuff out of the way, man.
And we just because I had this posted where it was the Catholic Church in exile, and I had a couple people message me being like, "Bob, who do you have on this week?" I'm like, "Don't worry, it's fine."
Are you out of your mind? No, I swear I've been doing this a very long time of paranormal and supernatural and parapsychology and and all such things. So we can talk about that. It's much more fun than theology. Theology is boring.
No, but we had to get that out of the way. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Bishop.
Well, I have a master's from Yale. I've been married almost 30 years. I teach at our seminary, psychology and religion and demonology. I have two adult children, and I have a natural-born psychic medium. So I have been in the paranormal field since I drew my first breath, but been studying it academically for a very long time. I'm in Mensa. I wrote standardized tests and curriculum for a living, SAT, GRE. So I love the science, the neuroscience, the quantum physics and cosmology, along with theology. And so, yeah, my house is decorated in thousands of books, that some of which I've actually read. And
you sound like me.
Yeah, if I own the book, I own the knowledge. I'll get to it eventually. I feel it's a urge towards hope that someday I will have all the time in the world to read all these.
Yeah, I know how that feeling goes. You collect one, you get a demon book, and then you're like, you know what, I'm gonna read this, and then you buy 10 more and you're like, uh-oh.
Exactly. And once you get to graduate school, you realize that you pick up one book, you don't even read it. You just go to the bibliography and the footnotes and find 50 more you have to buy before you even start. So
my first question is about demonology, because every religion seems to have a different take on what demonology is. So in your opinion, what is the study of demonology in your words?
Well, it's an actual academic discipline. People study the history of evil and notions of evil. You could get a PhD with that as a specialty. And it's really a history of religion and occult science, not in the sense of practicing, but in the sense of an actual in-depth academic history and that sort of thing. But a lot of people like, well, religion came along, and of course, religion needed an enemy, so it created evil. But the fact of the matter is, if you go back anthropologically, evil created religion. The idea of why do we suffer is what religion attempts to answer. So our earliest impulses, even in Neanderthal times, when we were burying people with perfectly good tools and food for the afterlife, the impulse was, how do I stop bad things from happening to me? From where does all this suffering come? And the answer was fairies, gods of the grain, the sun, whatever it happened to be, and then rituals to control those things to keep them from happening to me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go on.
I was just going to say, so demonology in and of itself is a study of the way in which we perceive personified causes of suffering.
So would you say that that suffering goes on even outside the realm of like what we perceive as a demon? Suffering can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Would you say that kind of narrows it down as well?
Suffering just is. It's the nature of the beast. We live in bodies with a bunch of other people with free will, with in a closed system with limited resources. There's going to be suffering. I like my thermostat at 63 degrees.
Yeah.
My husband likes it at 73. Yes, clapping for the cold people.
I know, Lizard. Now,
if we set it to 68 and everybody's like, oh, it's a compromise. But compromise is just everybody agreeing to suffer a little bit instead of a lot. Suffering is just the nature of living. And you can accept that stoically. And you can try to control it. And for many of us, we would rather believe that we were unlovable and that this God was angry at us and punishing us than believe that we can't control the world and we can't stop bad things from happening to us.
That's a good answer. I think you nailed it, but that's it's a very interesting concept. And the some of the other realms that you study other than demonology, can you tell us a little bit about some of your other specialties?
Oh, my dear God. I love movies, but other than that, that's not germane to this point. I am interested in the study of perception and cognitive neuroscience. So the study of intention and will and how it affects observation on a quantum level. I tend to get caught up in those ideas of how can we better study the paranormal when we seem to be stuck scientifically on three or four ideas, and there is just so much more out there to be explored. So I'm actually devising a series of experiments in quantum entanglement in the paranormal to see how that goes, and stay tuned for the results of those. I was part of Project Psi, which was an experiment to try to deduce how psychic readings affected the human body. And those results were mind-blowing. We essentially found proof that the brain does something when you're doing a psychic reading that it does at no other time for no other human activity that we're aware. So I really love the scientific aspect and the philosophical aspect of finding answers for things that don't fit in to the rules as we know them.
What is, can you tell us a little bit about that experiment you were a part of?
Project Psi was the brainchild of Dr. Charles Kennedy and I. Unfortunately, Dr. Kennedy has passed a couple years ago. But as a nurse and a neuroscientist, he used the EEG, an EEG machine, which is if you've ever had a sleep study, you got all the wires coming off, and it studies activity in different parts of the brain. So we started with the EEG machine, which was actually created by a Nazi scientist in order to study telepathy. And now we use it for actual medical stuff, just like the phonograph was created by Edison to capture ghost voices. And it works, apparently. So we used the EEG, and we found that only certain areas of the brain were active during a psychic reading. And those areas of the brain were not thought, the prefrontal cortex, they weren't memory, and they weren't imagination, which is all the things psychics are being accused of, the manipulation, imagination. Those went silent. It was this other unknown area of the brain that lit up. But we started noticing, we started talking about some of the things that all psychics seem to have. They all seem to have autoimmune diseases. They all seem to get headaches and exhaustion. And so one of the most amazing outcomes of this was that the human brain consumes all of our oxygen and sugar. I mean, it's 10% of our body weight consumes 30% of those things. So when we're thinking really hard, we're using up sugar in our brain. So our blood sugar should drop a little bit. So I think it was MIT did a study, and they had kids over 4 hours taking the SAT. They saw blood sugar drops of between 4 and 10 points over 4 hours. In less than 10 minutes, we were getting blood sugar drops of 30 just from doing a psychic reading, no movement.
That's fascinating.
And those studies, from what I understand, have been replicated at the name's escaping me, but there is a jet propulsion laboratory out in Arizona that I believe has also replicated the results. I'm doing a whole new series because we began on prayer. My question is it because we really believe? Are we connecting to something? So I've basically created new experiments to account for those variables. We're going to start doing blood sugar tests during Mass because we found that we did a prayer study, and in 20 minutes of prayer, my blood sugar dropped 35 points, but it dropped in different intervals based on different kinds of prayer. So the one it dropped the most was 2 minutes of just intense praying for my daughter, who's disabled. And my blood sugar dropped 17 points. And I'm not diabetic or hypoglycemic. And diabetic psychics have actually said, I feel better when I do readings. and others get massive headaches. You just want to collapse. And that's how our priests feel after Mass. So we're like, okay, what's connecting here? So I'm continuing those experiments, and I'll be doing that with my priests and showing the results on YouTube and things like that, because I want to advance the field a little past the television aspect that it's had for the past several years.
What is the drive behind that? Because that is, out of all my years of hearing study with science with the paranormal, it's usually people like to use the term fringe science or pseudoscience. Sounds like you're legitimately doing the groundwork for scientific study to the paranormal and spirituality, which is very fascinating. So what's the drive? What moved you to want to study that particular field?
Well, I'm out of my mind, first. Second, I have a pathological terror of boredom. In all honesty, first, my brain never worked like other people's. I was actually part of the GATE program, and I find out the CIA was in that, and I'm like, oh, that explains a lot. But anyway, in elementary school, the Gifted and Talented program was run by the CIA. Go figure. But I was always fascinated by, why can I do these things? What makes me different? And pair that with the fact that they kept trying to kick me out of elementary school because they kept saying they didn't know what to do with me. I was too smart, which is ridiculous because I'm actually pretty stupid, especially if you watch me drive or attempt to use utensils at certain times. I am not a bright person. So the drive really began with me trying to understand my own experiences. But also, for me, life isn't about finding answers. It's about asking that one really good question that the people behind you can answer. And so with my tendency, this voracious tendency towards just knowledge and thinking and trying to understand things, I want to understand the exceptions to the rule. But I also have this grounding in science. I was before I veered into religion permanently, I'd actually been accepted into the PhD program in applied particle physics at NIU. And I decided, well, actually, I didn't decide, I got pregnant.
Ah, that happens.
So I didn't do that. God decided for me. But I want to know. And I know that I'll never know anything. But life is about wonder. And I would like to leave something behind that others can build on.
That's fascinating. What do you think, Count?
Yeah, very fascinating. No, for sure. Some stuff you don't even think about before.
Exactly. So my next question to you is, as a old Catholic bishop, or exiled Catholic bishop, whatever the terminology you choose is, there is, in Roman Catholicism, which both Count Panic and I both grew up in at one point in our lives, exorcism was considered a rite. And exorcism is considered something you have to get a lot done before a Catholic priest steps in and says, okay, I'll do this exorcism. In your field and in your step of spirituality, how does one go about needing an exorcism as an exiled Catholic in your flock?
Well, all right. So first, I think it's important that everybody understands that every blessing a priest ever gives is technically an exorcism. That's what they are. That's the teaching. So no one has come to, and our group is very small, no one has come to this group or talked to me who has ever needed the extreme, I'll just call it extreme and rare, version of an exorcism. If that were to happen, there would be requirements for medical, for mental health. You can do more damage by agreeing that someone needs an exorcism than you would do by an actual exorcism if you are incorrect. So you don't want to play into any kind of psychotic delusions or anything like that. I think that people's ideas of the things that are out there, the entities, the events, it's like it's a ghost, it's a demon, it's a UFO, that's all we've got. There are so many other things in this universe, things that would make what we think of as demons just piss their pants. And we're just so locked in on this one concept. A lot of the exorcisms that I've performed, and I'll call them that because they're not what most people would recognize. I mean, in other religions, it's just get out and they go. It's not all of the drama and theater that we think of when we think of these exorcisms. But a lot of it is removing other things. One of the people who locks down my house spiritually for me is a shaman from Brooklyn. He's a Brooklyn Jew who became a shaman. And he studied in Haiti, studied in the Southwest. And he sort of remotely locks down my house and he calls them smoogies because he's like, is it a demon? Meh, I don't know. It's a smoogie. We just clean it up. So I think when anytime anybody has some kind of preternatural event or presence in their life, they're like, oh, my God, it's a demon. I'm like, is it? There's this whole gamut. This almost like the electromagnetic spectrum of entities. And we don't need to shoot right to ultraviolet. And they're not even the top. There's all these others. So I do a lot of attachments of entities. Are they demons? Are they not? At the end of the day, we shouldn't really be focusing because they love attention. And if you give them attention, whether they're the one doing it or not, they're going to just keep coming at you. Don't give them any attention. They're not interested. All these other things are interesting. So that was a long way of saying it would be the same as Rome. I might not even do it. I might even turn it over to a Roman priest or try to get someone in with a Roman priest who has more expertise. It would depend on the situation, and oftentimes that depends on what I sense is going on with them and the information they give me. But the vast majority of these things are handled pretty easily. Not easily, that's not the right word, without the big production that people think of when they think of exorcisms.
Excellent. Folks, remember that we are a live radio show on top of a podcast, so if you have any questions, you can call in at 219-845-1100. We do have our first caller on the line.
I believe so. Let me hit this button, and hopefully this works, because we are up and we are rolling. So
yes, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bob. Good evening,
John.
Hey, John.
So, I'm listening to your guests. As always, you have interesting people on there. So that was a good question you asked her about performing exorcism in her religion. And I'm a little surprised that, that you did say that somewhat similar to the Catholic exorcism, you would have to do a little more investigation, more maybe, have more knowledge about the person that's asking for exorcisms and rather than going ahead and performing them. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
That you stated more or less somewhat of a Roman Catholic exorcism would be like similar to what your form of exorcism would be in your religion, correct?
Bishop, were you able to hear the call?
I couldn't. If you can summarize the question, I'm sorry.
Sometimes we have that disconnect.
We have that disconnect, and we got to figure that out. Yeah. John, can you summarize your question so we can ask it?
Yeah, can she hear me? Or
she can't hear you, unfortunately. We're having technical difficulties.
Sorry.
Okay, so, well, not the main question. The main reason I didn't call it was this question, but, this dollar, I said, I'm a little surprised that her form of exorcism with the religion that she practices is similar to the Roman Catholic exorcism, you know, that where you'd have to investigate the person first to make sure that, you know, medically, what, you know, that they don't just automatically go in and perform an exorcism when it's requested. There's some background check involved, as there is in the Roman Catholic Church. So just mention to her that, you know, I agree with her, you know, that that is a proper way to, you know, to go about an exorcism, is to do a little more investigation of who the person is and, you know, why they're asking for an exorcism.
Got that, Bob?
Yeah, I did. Thanks, John, for calling in, and I'm going to relay that to...
I ask one more?
Oh, of course. I'm going to relay that one, and then just ask your second question. What's up?
Okay, my second question is, when she's talking about blood level dropping, I if I heard correctly, it's when you're stressed, in her opinion, that, or in her study or whatever, that the blood level, blood sugar drops in your system. And she's pretty adamant on that, that, you know, that has happened. She has proof of that happened. Has she ever checked in the medical, well, maybe like we asking a physician and say, hey, you know, I've had people whose blood sugar has dropped when they were under stress or when they're, you know, her priest, she mentioned her priest. You know, did she ever brought this up, like a medical professional, doctor, and see what they would think about what she's saying?
That sounds good, John. I could pass that question along for
you. Remember
you.
Both those questions.
I remember both. Yeah. Well, there was one statement, one question. I remember them both. And make
right,
note
Bob,
that we need
you.
To figure out how to make that work.
Sometimes it works.
Sometimes it doesn't.
We're
I don't
just lucky we
it.
Get on the air today. There,
yeah. John, thanks for calling in, as always.
All right, Bob.
So John, our regular caller, he's one of our Roman Catholic experts that calls in, and he wanted to point out how fascinating it was that the Roman Catholic Church and the Catholic Church in Exile kind of follow the same theology behind exorcism. That's what he was pointing out.
There's the research that goes
into it before you just say, all right, I'm coming in and I'm going to do an exorcism. He wanted to point out that he found that very fascinating. And then the set question he wanted to ask you was, have you ever brought your findings up to the scientific community at large about the blood sugar drops during prayer and psychic readings and whatnot, and how did the scientific community at large handle it, if you've ever brought it up to them?
No. Dr. Kennedy, after he finished this study, became very ill. He had a stroke. And so he did self-publish a book that brought up this. His research was lost because he wound up in a nursing home. So unfortunately, whereas I have the basis to rebuild the data, I don't have access to the data. It was an unfortunate situation. So no, not yet. However, I don't want to hold it to myself. If other people want to go out and try this and do it, I'm not a neuroscientist. I just play one on TV. So if you want to go out and do this, please. Right now, I am building a team of medical experts and theologians, and we're going to work on the spirituality aspect and deal with those variables. So someone who has greater access, as he did over 315 psychics. Every single one of them had autoimmune disorders. Every single one of them had those blood sugar drops. Every single one of them had their brain shut down in all the areas that would be used for manipulation, for thought, for memory, and for imagination.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so I have some of the research. I would have to completely rebuild it. And rather than take the time to learn what I'd have to do that, John, I would rather go in this other direction that I'm already pretty well grounded in educationally.
There you go.
Excellent.
Bob, you're
it's by the humidity,
way,
guys.
The humidity of Bob's hair right now. You can probably see it going crazy.
Everybody's
right
pointing out my hair tonight in chat, and I am telling you, it is 90 degrees in this room, folks. I am sorry my hair is
what
frazzled.
We need to keep the thermostat where she has it right there. I don't know.
I'm going to start doing the show from Bishop Rake's house because it's probably it's a lot cooler there, and then this lizard terrarium you got me
we're
in.
Scales here.
Sorry my hair is frazzled, everybody.
But you will not be getting a haircut.
I am not cutting my hair. No, That's not going to happen anytime soon.
Okay.
All right. So let's get back to my So the next question I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was the belief in psychics and the belief in psychics in the Catholic Church, at least as far as the old Catholicism one goes. It's a big no-no. So in your eyes, how do you explain what a psychic is and how one may receive their gifts in a spiritual sense?
Well, the problem that I've had with that, and I wrote a whole book on it, about psychic mediums and scripture and basically an apologetic, a defense that Christianity has always believed in psychic mediums, that the two areas in the Bible where it says don't do that don't mean what we think they mean, and that we're just using different language. If I were to say to an evangelical pastor I'm a psychic medium, they'd be horrified. But if I tell them I have the gifts of the Spirit, including discernment of spirits, oh, that's a little different.
Sure.
And it's not. It's not. I think so much of the tension between religions is really a matter of language. If we just got rid of the black and white thinking and were able to say, okay, I'm going to throw away all the words I've used. What is it you do? Oh, my God, that's what I do. But with psychic mediumship, there's an array of gifts. They all come in different forms through different senses. There's clairaudience, which is when you hear something. There's clairvoyance when you see it. There's clairsentience when you feel it. People can remote view. There's all these different gifts that can come about. So I think that everybody has a certain amount of intuition, and I'm going to really get people riled up when I say a lot of intuition is just our brains processing information we've taken in subconsciously. So I notice micro expressions you made when I said this or that, and so immediately I get the sense. But then there's other information that we get that we could not possibly have taken in subconsciously. I mean, it's sometimes I'll do a reading with someone and I'll tell them something they didn't even know that they find out later was true about the dead person. So for me, someone who has actual psychic medium gifts means that they are getting what Catholicism through the ages has called through the saints infused knowledge. It's just an instantaneous knowledge of someone. And if you read the lives of the saints across the church, oh, my dear God, they all do all of this. There's nothing I do that they didn't do. There's a lot that I actually know, except for the really horrible things I do when no one's looking, because this comes right out. They didn't do that. I do that. But for me, a psychic medium is someone who can take in information about something they could not possibly have gleaned in any other way. And it's not against the Bible. It's not against Christianity at all. Jesus talked to dead people. In all three Gospels, on the Mount, which we call the Transfiguration, he was talking to Moses and Elijah. Now, Elijah was taken bodily up into heaven, but Moses, he dead. He's dead, dead. They buried him. In fact, the letter of St. Jude talks about St. Michael and Lucifer arguing about Moses's grave. He's dead. Jesus is talking to him, and Jesus said, I was going to do even greater things than he did. And then in the Old Testament, the word that is poorly translated as medium, look, when they get a bunch of old pastors and theologians together to translate the Bible, what are the odds that you're going to get a really brilliant Hebrew scholar who also knows a lot about the paranormal? They're just going to use the wrong word. Oh, they're talking to dead people. The actual event that's forbidden in the Hebrew Bible is what's called necromancy or necromancy. And that was a blood ritual in which you called forth the spirit, trapped it, and asked it for the future. That's what it meant. That's all it meant. Didn't mean just talking to dead people. And then the word translated as medium means ghost mistress or ghost wife or ghost whore. It was about channeling and allowing this thing to take control of your body. That's what was forbidden, because that's just always a bad idea. So it didn't mean people who talk to the dead. It didn't mean people who foretell the future. The priests in the high temple in scripture, in the Hebrew Bible, in the Old Testament, were supposed to sew dice into their robes. The dice they used to divine God's will. It was part of their garment. I mean, it's crazy. The more you know, the more you realize that a lot of this has to do with bad translations, with attempting to read a 5,000-year-old text written in three dead languages from a culture that hasn't existed in thousands of years, and pretending that some guy named John wrote it in Indiana in 1992. You can't read it like that. So I rambled, but I think I circled around your question pretty well. I may even have circled it and peed on it like a little puppy. So I think I came close there.
You know, I don't get to laugh much on this show, so I appreciate your humor, Bishop. So my next question is talking a little bit about spirits, right? Mm-hmm. And the concept that what a ghost is in your perspective, and we're not talking malevolent, we're talking like something that's just kind of stuck here, right? Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on what a ghost actually is? And again, non-malevolent.
Gotcha. So that this is where it gets so weird that I always found ghosts boring, because I'm like, human consciousness. I'm human. I have a consciousness. This isn't interesting. However, we need to distinguish between a ghost who's actually stuck here. I think a lot of people think because they get activity that the ghost is actually here. Time, space, dimensional reality, it's not even what it looks like, and we know that scientifically here. We're not talking about an afterlife. I mean, here, time is not chronological. Our brain takes information in packets. So that's why we experience time chronologically, but it isn't chronological. On the smallest level, on a quantum level, you look at something, you say, I want to know how big you are, and it goes backwards in time and has a size. And the universe is crazy, and that's just pure science. So I think that we get hung up on, I'm here, I'm getting an EVP, this person's stuck, they need help. Are you getting an EVP from a human consciousness? So let's just agree that a ghost in its purest sense is a disembodied human consciousness. Just call it that. From a body that has died, I'll add that caveat. Because I've seen my own thoughts imprinted on an EVP. I've seen EVPs disappear when four people had heard them. I've experienced time slips in places where we go in and we get audio and video of a sea captain in the basement of a house in Plainfield, Illinois. And when we see him, he says to us, what the hell are you doing on my ship? And I'm like, he's at sea. And this, so somewhere there's this poor old sea captain who's going, these weird three people just walked onto my ship. They were ghosts. Were they? So I think we need to start distinguishing that there's a lot more going on out there than just disembodied human consciousnesses. And they're not all stuck here just because you can talk to them here. If I hide 500 telephones throughout an empty five-story apartment building, and I call you, all right, on those phones, every phone you pick up, if I call it, you can pick it up, you can hear me. I'm not at each of those phone locations. You could go to the White House, you could go to the Lincoln Memorial, you could go to Lincoln's tomb, you could go to Springfield and Gettysburg, and you could get EVPs of Abraham Lincoln. Is he in all of those places? Is he in none of them? Are we dealing with sort of a repetitive, eternal reliving of a moment because we're moving chronologically, but moments don't? What's going on here? I think the questions are huge, and we have to expand our minds past the notion that these are simply, you know, oh, it's Uncle Abe. He died. He's in the house. Is he? So that's kind of where my passion is in figuring out if it is a disembodied human consciousness whose body has died and they have been released from it and they are on some other dimensional plane that I'm just going to call heaven. All right. And they're there. They can talk to you anywhere in the world because they're outside of time and they're outside of space, and they can talk to you and I and 500 people at the same time, or they could talk to me continuously throughout all times. They don't have those restrictions. So again, I just want to push the paranormal field into kind of breaking open that box and being a little more, things are far stranger than the paranormal field can imagine. And those are actual physicists telling us that. They're like, hey guys, catch up. It's weirder. It's weirder over here. When did like hard science get weirder than fringe science? They kind of left us in the dust. So I think we need to catch up with them and take a look back and go, oh my God, there was so much more going on here than we ever dreamed was possible.
What do you think, Count?
Yeah, it kind of breaks it down to interesting facts. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about ghosts and whatnot on the show, but you know, it's great because there's not one take on it, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I never see the ghosts there, Bishop. I never personally. You know, there's some spooky. I think I'm just paranoid when I'm in alone in a dark room, honestly, and I believe something is there. But that's not to say they're not out there, Bob. I just never seen one.
Oh. So with the remaining of the time there, Bishop, because our fans always like to hear the heroic stories of our guests, let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the exorcisms that you've performed in your career, if you're able to talk about any of the cases that have stood out to you, or even just maybe an investigation you've been on where things went completely right and you had some serious evidence that you couldn't disagree with and you're like, I'm baffled. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your cases you've worked on?
Well, I'll tell you two because they both happened to me, and so I feel comfortable sharing all aspects of them. The first one is the time I watched a woman get possessed in real time, and this was scary as hell. I was in a Unitarian Universalist church because I wanted to be a Catholic priest, and I have lady parts, and so I had to look for other ways to do that. So I was in a Unitarian church, and their beliefs are very squishy. You can pretty much believe whatever you want, and they come together as sort of a society of seekers. I was in a group by one of the members where they did meditation, and they were very into spiritual gifts. And I'm coming in as someone who shut my gifts down a long time ago because of all of the crap that was happening to me. It was just getting scarier and scarier and scarier. So I just shut them down. I bottled them up. And here I am in this place realizing, oh, I forgot I could do this. Like I had completely repressed all those memories. So I'm all of my big 22 years old. I had big girl pants, I thought. And I'm sitting in this room with these people, and I suddenly realize that I can see all these spirits with them. And I'm thinking, this is in your head. And then they start talking about spirits, dead relatives I didn't know they had. Well, there was one person in the room. Her name was Evie. I will never forget that. I also never forget that I thought she had a speech impediment, but it turned out she was just from Western Massachusetts. Sorry, folks in Western Massachusetts. So she was just, every time she came in the room, I wanted to hit her. And anyone who's like been in my presence, my husband calls me the nun. He's like, oh, everybody loves you. You're so sweet. And I'm not really, but that's what people think. So I put that out there. But I just wanted to hit her. I don't get angry at people like that. And this rage would build up in me. So during a session, Evie, they turn out the lights, they lit a candle, they're playing Enya. It's the whole trappings of, you know, stupid white people doing spiritual stuff in their house. And here's Evie sitting in the corner, and she's in a chair, and she's like this, and her face is contorting. And all of a sudden, I see this black shadow, and I'd seen this before. It's not a shadow person. That's different. And I think, okay, so that's another thing. I won't go into that. It's a whole side genre for me. But it was a figure, a humanoid figure, but it is of a particular black. It's not shadow person black. They look like someone has punched a hole in reality. So it's just like a cutout of reality. This is an oily where there's things moving inside the black. So as she's sitting there, it's pushing its hands into her mouth. It was the most horrible thing I'd ever seen. And she's making these faces. And I didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, I just felt St. Michael there. And I'm just throwing as much of my will and energy into the thought of, no, that's all I was doing. That's all I knew what to do. And eventually it turned and looked at me and then just disapparated. I have a pounding headache, like the worst migraine I've ever had. It's like brain freeze on steroids. The lights come up. Evie's still doing that. And everybody's looking at her thinking she's having this moment. And all I'm literally like rocking like this because my head hurts so bad. And Evie says, when they get to her about her experience, she said, this beautiful angel was trying to come inside of me. And I jumped to my feet. And then all of my graduates pointed at her and said, I hate you. And everybody in the room just like looked at me. And I will never forget the way she said it. I swear something got in her. She looked me dead in the eye and she goes, but I like you.
Ooh.
And that was the creepiest thing anyone had ever spoken to me. And I never went back. So wasn't my first experience. It was the first time I watched that happen to someone. It was fast forward 20 years or so. 2015, I just become a priest. I go out to visit Dr. Kennedy because we're going to go visit a satanic altar in a little town in Texas that was featured prominently during the satanic panic, but for which all these locals had their own stories. So we're going to visit this place where a friend's father had experiences. Cops had experiences with devil worshippers and everything. So we're just going to go take a look. And we show up at this property, and it's a kiddie swimming pool and tennis courts. And I'm like, where are we? I feel like I'm back by Chicago. This is like, this is not what I was expecting in a satanic altar. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, guys, you need to do better because I'm unimpressed. That's all I was thinking. And we go around a corner, and by God, there is a giant stone circle with three massive stones in the center. And you could walk in the circle because the stones themselves are only about knee high and there are spaces between them. And the first of our group goes in, the second of our group, and something shoved me, and it's my protection. I was a priest a week, and it said, don't go in, just right in my head. And I stopped myself. I said, guys, I can't go in. I don't know why. And so they went in, and the compass is spinning. You step outside the circle, the compass is fine. You step inside the circle, the compass starts spinning. There had been three murders and two suicides in the apartments above the place. Every time someone tried to buy that little patch of land, the most horrible things happened to them. So we find this out later. But during the day, I'm like, well, this is interesting. And there's a fake sign, oh, 666. I'm like, oh, wow, never saw that before. But then underneath, there are these little markings that looked Sumerian to me. And I'm like, okay, I don't think kids are going to the library getting books on ancient Sumerian and cuneiform. So I was fascinated by this. And the stone in the center was big enough for me to lay on, and it had been burned with an accelerant. So I'm fascinated. The next morning, you know, we do the whole getting EVPs. The next morning, Dr. Chuck calls. He goes, ooh, I have an EVP for you. And I'm like, oh, okay. He plays it. And you just hear him go, can you talk to me? And in this EVP, this voice that makes you want to vomit. I've had people throw earphones across the room the second they hear it. Says, make her leave. Make the girl leave.
Referring to you.
Me. I was the only girl there because I was a priest. Now, what's even more fascinating is you're supposed to process EVPs. They're not supposed to stay whispers. That was for television. So there's a way of slowing down the frequency of the voice and pushing some of the static noise back so you have something clearer. Well, we could hear music behind this EVP, and so we processed it, and what got pulled out was unending. I mean, it's always there. He visited the place two more times, and it's still there. It is a chant with horns and trumpets in Latin. Continuously play. So it's probably some kind of protection spell.
Huh. That made my skin crawl.
Someone said to me, go get rid of them. And I'm like, screw. I'm not getting you. Get rid of them. I'm not kicking a hornet's nest. I don't know how big or how deep or how current any of this is. I have no idea. And I don't feel equipped to deal with it. Other people might feel equipped to deal with it. I don't feel that's my calling. It's a really good way for me to take myself out so that my group has no leader. But those are my two stories for you this evening.
Those are great stories. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, terrific. We have Chucky Danger. The chat, of course, is going live right now. Miracles. Chucky basically says, can we hear miracles, please? Any miracles?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's end on a high note.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bob had the... You know, Bob never likes to end on a high note.
You know what? The fans like to hear the hero versus the bad guy story. People like stuff.
But okay? Let's send them home happy.
Okay. Well, so can we hear about a positive miracle story or perhaps like a positive investigation you've been on, or maybe you helped something pass over or whatever it might be?
Absolutely. I've had a couple of those, but I'll tell you a humorous one. When I was first doing psychic medium work, when I came out as a psychic in 2010, I was on an investigation at this house. It was a condo, it was brand new. And the woman's husband had died in the house. So they bring me in after the investigation. And I walk in, and I'm like, wow, okay, there's a guy here. He's saying he's a brother. He committed suicide. He keeps telling me one, two, third time worked. Third time worked because I can actually hear them speaking. He's saying it was on a holiday when he actually went. He's sorry he left you behind. I said he had narcolepsy. Pretty significant detail there. I'm like, he has narcolepsy. He keeps falling asleep. And I just was going on and on. I mean, this guy was like... So the woman who owned the house is sitting there like, no. And I am positive because this guy is loud. And I'm like, yes. Are you sure? She's like, mm-mm. I'm like, okay, then I'm sorry. And I got up and I pick up my coat and she goes, did that have to happen here? I said, what do you mean? Does it have to happen at my house? I said, your brother? No. And she goes, yeah, because my brother killed himself on Father's Day. And it was his third attempt. And yeah, he had narcolepsy. And I just had to sit down. And I'm like, no, I'm going to be here another hour. So this is well before my ordination, but I was still kind of playing the chaplain role. So I tell her, you know what? He feels very guilty. For leaving you behind the way he did. I said, I think it would be beneficial for you. Oh, it was the anniversary. It's the 30th anniversary of his suicide that day. So I said, it's his anniversary. And, you know, he gets to kind of, he's been healed. His soul is ready to move on and do other work. So I came back and we did a prayer for the souls in purgatory. So for the release of any soul that's in any state where it needs to move on now, it gets to go to the next layer. I always envision the other side as many different levels, as many different spheres. So we do that, and as I'm driving home, and we all felt wonderful. She was crying. It was very healing for her because she actually got to talk to him because he was so loud. On my drive home, it is a twisty road. I'm coming from, Bob, you probably know, I'm coming from way up on 31, taking the river road all the way down to St. Charles. So it's all these twisty, foresty roads on the river. And it's dark, and I turn a corner, and there's finally a street light, and I turn, and that bastard is in the seat next to me, and he goes, I get to come with you now, right? And I was like, oh. Except I use the F word. I almost went off the road. And I'm like, no, you don't get to come with me now. Oh, my God. I said, you never get to come. I will look for you, Gary. I will find you. So he kind of shows up every now and then to give me a clue because he wanted to help me the way I'd helped him.
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, I'm really lucky that all the scary dead things want to hang out, but... More power to me.
More power to you. All right. So we have a couple minutes left, Bishop. I was hoping you can do some plugs. Tell us where people can find you. You have a book out where people can, mm-hmm. Is it in print? People can buy. Tell us all this stuff.
You can find out about the church. It's a good way to get a hold of me. CatholicChurchInExile.com. I'm easy to find on Facebook. I have a link tree. If you look up Bishop Rake, you'll be able to find everything. I have a book. I wrote it in 2014, God and the Paranormal, Ghosts, Mediums, and the Afterlife in the Bible. It's on Amazon. And I'll be at the Chicago Paracon this Saturday. You can come by and say hi. If you're in the area and you want to attend church with me and my crazy crew, we're all very nice and happy and fun. We have masses Sunday at 9 a.m. in St. Charles, and you can get a hold of me through any of those means, the website, Facebook, Instagram, and I could give you more information. I also do psychic reading in exchange for a donation to our orphanage in Kenya. I don't take the money. It's not my particular, God's thing was, you don't get to keep the money, but you can do it for the kids. So if you want to email me, bishoprake@gmail.com, I can get you those details. I don't keep a penny. None of our clergy gets paid. So we have to raise the funds to help those folks out there and at home. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to plug all that. Oh, I have a store, oldcatholicstores.com. Lots of really cool exorcism medals, St. Michael's stuff, protection items. And if you buy from there, again, the money goes to the church, and I'll bless it for you if you want. You send me a message.
Speaking of stuff on my neck, folks, I do have a jar of exorcism salt from Bishop Rake from the church.
Yes.
From one of the events we attended. That's how we met. Yeah. I was able to pick up a jar of exorcism salt.
You never know when you're going to need it.
It might come to you, Count. I'm waiting for you to flip out on me one day, and I'm going to get some of my palm, and
you never know.
I'm going to be banishing you.
You never know when you're going to need it.
Now, Bishop, before we call it
a
night.
Wait a second, Bob. Oh, yeah. She mentioned something there. You're going to be somewhere Saturday, too.
Yes, I am. I'm going to be at the Chicago Paranormal Convention as well. I have a booth
there. Wait, what?
Yeah. And there's also might be a special guest.
I'm gonna make it out. I can't promise you the whole time there, Bob, but I'm going to do my best to get out there for some of those hours out there.
Count Panic is coming to the Chicago Paranormal Convention with me.
Hopefully it's a little cooler over there than it is.
It's air conditioned in there.
Is it air conditioned?
Oh, it's nice, yeah.
Okay. Let's check on the air conditioning first before we agree to anything.
Excellent.
Here, okay?
But I'll be there. I will be there. Count Panic will be there. We have t-shirts for sale. We'll have stickers for sale. And maybe we'll be close enough so we could say hello to Bishop Rake. That'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Now, before we let you go, something I always make all my guests do is to end the show with a quip, a riddle, a piece of advice, something. I always make people end with something. So it could be as simple as don't play with matches, but, you know, whatever you got.
Well, actually, this came up during the thing. It's a quote by historian Thomas Mann, and it says, "The mind that does not question, that does not habitually wonder, is but a pair of spectacles behind which there is no eye."
That is a great quote. What do you think, Count?
That is a fantastic quote.
All right. Do you have any closing words for the audience tonight, Count?
Crank up the AC, folks.
Yeah, it's hot
out there
now. Next couple days.
It's something. We can't complain. We're going to be complaining in the winter when it's...
You don't hear me complaining.
No. But at least you didn't wear a hoodie this week.
Shut up, Cuphead.
Last week you had a hoodie on.
Hoodie on and sweatpants. Yeah. Ain't happening today.
No.
All right.
You're wearing I don't think you're wearing pants over there.
I'm wearing shorts.
Oh, okay.
There's a desk.
You can't see anything.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of myself, Cal Panic, and Bishop Rake, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, good night. I love you. And to my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing in the afterlife. And to Tiff, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who want are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.